America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. By honoring your sacred vocation of nursing, you impact your family, your friends, and your community. At Grand Canyon University, our online RN to BSN, MSN, or DNP degree programs allow you to balance online coursework with local in-person clinical, practicum, or immersion hours. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Brother Paul Williams, thank you so much for joining the Ansari podcast.
Lovely to see you. Assalamu alaikum.
Waalaikumsalam wa rahmatullah. Thank you so much, man. Brother Paul Williams is the host of one of the best and most influential Muslim podcasts in the world today. His list of guests are most impressive, with an array of theological, philosophical, and scientific experts. His work is helping to cultivate and empower Muslims to become more adventurous and to become more than just mere unadventurous conventional contributors, but true shapers of contemporary philosophical and theological discourse during a time of extraordinary change and opportunity. And for that, Brother Paul, we thank you and welcome you to the Ansari podcast.
I'm very happy to be here. Thank you very much for inviting me to your place in Texas.
Oh, it's awesome having you. One of the things that I find, you've spoken about this a lot, but I would really like to look at a Islamic lens, or just honestly, your findings on near-death experience, and are we getting the full picture?
I just want to give you one example of some research as a way into this subject. So I'm not going to address the broad themes, because I want to show you some remarkable research that's been done, or share with you, that you can access now on YouTube. Now, I'm looking now on my iPhone. I took a screenshot of it earlier. This is research done by academics at the University of Connecticut here in the US, in a peer-reviewed academic article. And the article is entitled Near-Death and Out-of-Body Experiences in the Blind: A Study of Apparent Eyeless Vision. So, the authors were Professor Kenneth Ring, who's a professor at the university, and Sharon Cooper at the University of Connecticut. You can get this online. I googled it earlier today. What's the fuss about this? Okay, so these researchers looked at cases where people who had been born blind, so they've never seen in their lives, they grow up and they have a so-called near-death experience. So they're clinically dead and they have an out-of-body experience. That's what they claim. That's what these individuals who have this experience claim. So I'm born blind. I have a car crash, terrible car crash. You know, virtually dead or dead. The brain stopped. You know, heart stopped beating. I suddenly find myself outside of my body, looking down on the scene. Or in the hospital, and I can see what's going on, I can hear what's going on, and I'm obviously revived because I'm reporting on, you know, I don't die forever. And I make these claims. Well, I saw this happen, I saw that happen, I heard this happen. And a lot of these stories have been fact-checked. They've been independently checked. So how could this blind person have seen these things? In very specific detail about what people were doing. So this academic study looks at these claims or these personal testimonies in a lot of detail. So a lot of research has been done in this subject. And they recount what the claim was, and then they see if there was any independent corroboration. And the answer is yes. Over and over and over and over again, these people who were blind saw what was going on, and they did indeed see. It's impossible for them. I mean, it's impossible for them to have seen, but they did see somehow. And then these academics look at possible explanations. So they look at, you know, physicalist explanations, materialist possible explanations to how this could be possible, and then they come to a conclusion themselves. And they come to the conclusion. They use academic language, of course, not modern. We present and evaluate various explanations of these findings before arriving at an interpretation based on the concept of transcendental awareness. Now, this is, of course, an obscure academic way of saying that they did happen, these experiences, they were authentic, and that the mind is somehow, the consciousness was transcendent. It comes from a transcendent source. In other words, they're denying the possibility or the reality of any materialist explanation. So they affirm that the most plausible explanation is that these people really did see these things. They came, they were revived, and they're still blind. So the only time they saw anything is when they were dead. Now, there have been other studies where people have been born deaf. They have an out-of-body experience, and they hear everything that goes around for the first time in their lives. They have an out-of-body experience. They hear voices. And this is, and they recount what they heard when they're revived and they get better. I heard the nurse say this, the doctor say this, and so on. And this has been independently corroborated by actual, usually by doctors and professors and academics themselves. So it's tested. So it's not just like wild claims. And the things they saw or heard in these deaf and blind people were very specific. Things they could not have possibly have seen and heard from just general knowledge. You know, specific details of procedures in a hospital or something.
And you're saying that these doctors would then validate and be like, I actually did say this. I actually did do this.
Yeah, it's validated. So there's a lot of research now that suggests that this phenomena, these out-of-body experiences are real. They are objectively real, I mean. They're not just a product of a dying brain that has these kind of extraordinary visionary experiences. And these hypotheses of visionary experiences and biochemical work have been tested to see if they actually do explain this phenomena. And they don't explain this phenomena. So you're left with mystery. You're left with this kind of very... And why does this matter? What's this got to do with Islam? Well, I think it matters for two reasons. One is the standard paradigm in the West, I understand, is a materialist understanding of the human being. So ultimately, consciousness is a product of the brain. It's an epiphenomenal byproduct of our brains working. But this kind of evidence suggests actually that maybe consciousness is prior to mind, to the brain, I mean. Consciousness is the fundamental reality of the universe. And that the brain, the material brain, is somehow the medium through which we experience reality. Like a TV set would be the means through which we watch the signals that come from elsewhere. The non-visible signals that suddenly make the TV programs we see on our TV sets. So you can, if you destroy the TV set, the signals are still there. The brain, the consciousness is still there, but it's just not, it's not manifest in that material form, if you see what I mean. So in philosophy, this kind of belief is called idealism and is associated with people like Berkeley, who Bishop Berkeley, who the eponymous founder of Berkeley in California, but anyway, he's an Englishman, as opposed to other forms of, you know, materialist explanations or empiricist explanations of reality. So I think this shows that consciousness is ultimately independent of the brain. At death, we live on after death. The mind, the consciousness, the soul continues to exist.
And this shows this because basically the person in their physical being is deaf, is blind. Yeah. But then when they become into this conscious, subconscious state spiritual state, they're no longer deaf and blind, meaning that there's a separation between
the
physical.
There has to be. And also these people always usually say that the experiences they have whilst dead, in inverted commas, are much more heightened, much more acutely real than they would do in their normal lives. It's not like it's a dreamy, foggy, weird kind of experience. I don't know. For they say is more real and more intense. I mean, I don't know what words to use, but this is what they're saying, than an everyday experience. So it's a heightened state of awareness rather than a kind of, you know, like if you take, not that I have taken drugs, but you imagine a kind of kind of a bit weirdy kind of world where it's not really real, but this is intensely real. It doesn't look like an hallucination. It seems intensely based in real life. And the Quran, of course, talks very clearly about this kind of phenomena, that the reality beyond death is more real than this life. It explicitly says that. So the Quran knows things that we can't know in this life. It speaks about them, and science indirectly corroborates that.
Yeah, and Dr. Ibn that you had on even mentioned that his memories of that are more solidified in his brain of his near-death experience than even his own memories in real life.
Right. Yeah.
Even.
Yeah.
And I think he's a neuroscientist, right?
He was. Right now, yeah.
And he said there's no finding of long-term memory that has to do with actually being stored in the brain, because some people's memories, their brain is completely eradicated, yet they still have long-term memory.
Mm. And there are other fascinating phenomena. Professor Dale Allison from Princeton Theological Seminary has written a book on these kinds of experiences that came out a couple of years ago, and I interviewed him about it. I really recommend that book. And he talks about there is an often noticed phenomena that happens in nursing homes and hospitals when someone who has suffered from, say, acute Alzheimer's disease, when they basically lose their ability to communicate and apparently don't recognize people anymore, you know, in very old age, for example, senility and so on. Before they pass, before they die, in the hours or days before they die, you get these people become extremely conscious and awake again, and they're able to recognize their loved ones, their family, and talk very normally, actually. And there's one case that Dale Allison says where a person brain had been basically eaten away completely by cancer and had been reduced to mush. It's a horrible thing to say, but and this is corroborated scientific. This individual was known not to have virtually any brain left, and they continued to exist almost like in a vegetable state. I think it was a man, and he was obviously coming to the end of his life on earth, and before he died he suddenly became aware again. He suddenly came back to life and was the man he used to be, and he recognized his family. He spoke to them, had a conversation, and they were shocked. This guy didn't even have any brain left. It had been eaten away by cancer, and he was completely normal. He was back to his old self for several hours. He said goodbye and expressed his love for them and settled his affairs, and then he passed away.
Wow.
Now, this is not possible in terms of our current scientific understanding of the brain. If consciousness is dependent on the brain, that shouldn't have happened, but it did happen. It's a fact. There were witnesses. His whole family saw him. His doctors and nurses saw him talk. But he didn't have anything left. The brain. There's a technical term for his condition. It's in the book. I forget what it is now. And these are quite common. So clearly there's something going on. Before death, often people who are passing will speak to people in the room, so to speak, who are not in the room as far as we can see. So they'll speak to relatives who have already died, or they might speak to angelic figures who are approaching them. And it's fascinating on YouTube. I've even seen it on Twitter. You get clips of this one lady, old lady, who whose face became very radiant. She was like, she was absolutely ecstatic, and she was about to die, and she was conversing and seeing beings in the room, and the people who were in the room couldn't see anything. So she was clearly in contact with, I presume, angelic figures.
Was she Muslim?
No, she was a Western Caucasian, I think maybe an American woman. I mean, I don't know. I don't know about her faith, but I don't know. But that's very frequent, where people who are passing seem to be in contact with people who are not visible to those present.
Yeah.
And so I think we're seeing a transition to another dimension where people from other, maybe family or whatever, and the Quran talks about this, Islam talks about this, where they're reunited with their loved ones at that point. So
I actually had when my teacher was passing away, she had cancer. She, when we were in the hospital, she had a very similar experience.
Really?
Yeah, she started saying they're here.
Really?
We're like, who? And she started saying the angels, and saying how they filled the room. She actually died that night.
Yeah, very common. It's very common, and this was known about in our popular culture in our societies until, I'm told, until the beginning of basically the 19th century and the medicalization of death, where we removed it from people who died at home usually, and then now we pass away in hospitals, surrounded by technology and nurses and whatnot, you know. And these experiences were basically forgotten about or ignored completely Because how do you process this stuff medically? It's just not, doesn't fit within our paradigm of material causality. But now it's beginning to come back again, this awareness of these experiences, because so many people are reporting them in old people's homes and hospitals, and people are writing about them. There's been, in the last 10 years, 20 years, there's been a huge increase in actual academic research into these areas. There's now a massive research being done on it. Right. And these phenomena are taken really seriously. They're not being dismissed. Well, some people are dismissing them, but not in an arrogant, they're simply saying, well, we will find an explanation for it one day. Well, I mean, please.
And what we're speaking about right now is lucidity before death.
Lucidity before death, exactly.
And that's different than
out-of-body experiences.
Out-of-body experiences, yeah, near-death experiences.
Absolutely. So we're talking about lucidity at death, and we're talking about apparent angelic or predeceased people encountering the person who's passing, and we're talking about out-of-body experiences, which are not the same as near-death experiences.
Oh, okay.
Because sometimes in violent incidents in life, people have them anyway. They're not dying, but they have. And we're talking about NDEs as well.
Yeah.
So there are multiple, and there are other things as well. There are other phenomena. So all these rich, different kinds of experiences are happening, and they're being documented, and some of them are being independently corroborated as well as real, and they are real. They're not imaginary. They're not hallucinations.
Yeah, and I find what I find so fascinating about this is that the research done on lucidity before death that you've spoken about seems to show this incredible awareness of the both the spiritual realm and the physical realm, and understanding of where you're going. And in the Quran, at least in the Islamic tradition, not the Quran, there's this understanding that there's a time period before death where you can no longer become Muslim.
Right.
And that's actually why the Pharaoh, his Shahada didn't count.
That's right.
It almost seems, and this is just my little theory, that if you've entered the lucidity before death, this heightened conscious awareness, you're just not allowed to become Muslim anymore. You've seen too much. Mm-hmm. It's too late. Mm-hmm. There's also, going back to the NDE, one of the near-death experiences, NDE. One of the things that I found very fascinating about it is something called, where is it? The, I had it written down here. It's the life review.
Oh, yeah.
What's your take on the life review?
I don't know, but people in an NDE state recall experiencing when they wake up a period of every moment of their lives. They have become aware of it, and that they're with a spiritual being who accompanies them through this experience. I'm not saying this is the day of judgment, and I think I'd be wrong to say that, but it is a life review. But it's through everything that they've ever done, and they literally see it and witness it. And the effect, and what I find very interesting, is the effect that their actions have had on other people. And they become aware of other people's responses to that behavior.
They almost see it in their perspective.
Yeah.
Right?
So it's no longer just a solipsist kind of just me on my own. They're actually aware of the effects of their behavior on other people, good and bad. So it's a very holistic kind of experience. There's also, by the way, I don't want to forget to mention, there are what's called hellish NDEs. These are experiences, apparent experiences of the afterlife, which are terrifying and hell-like, where people, there's a very famous guy called Storm, I forget his name now, anyways, an American professor, art professor from the States, who went to Paris, had a terrible medical condition, nearly died, an appalling time in a Paris hospital, apparently. But he was an atheist, and he was he himself says of his life at that time, he was very motivated by ambition and selfish ambition, and wasn't a nice person at all. He was a professor of art. He nearly died. He had this out-of-body experience where he entered into hell and was tormented by demons. He's written a book about it. And so much of this is very similar to Islamic teaching about the nature of hell as well. Anyway, he survived and came back to the state. He's now a minister of religion. He gave up his profession. So not all experiences are nice or pleasant or a lot of paradise. Like this guy, Ibn, you mentioned, some are the opposite. The experiences of hell-like and that can be a very powerful motivator to change, as well, clearly. So not just life reviews, it's experiences of hellish and para, heavenly states as well.
Yeah, especially if you've treated people poorly, then your experience may become more hellish.
Absolutely.
I think what's very interesting about the whole experience is that you're viewing it from other people's perspective. Not only are you seeing how you've treated others, you're seeing how they felt when you
and
treated
that's them remarkable. Well. Again, that strikes me as an authentic thing, because how on earth would you begin to know about that?
Well, I heard this one story where a Vietnam veteran in his NDE shot someone, and he relived the moment he shot a Vietnam soldier from the Vietnam soldier's perspective, and he saw how the family reacted to it and the kids. And you ask yourself, like, the question that comes up to me is, well, how did he see the reaction of the family? He wasn't there for that. It's not like he's into his own memories. He's accessing memories that are not of himself. So that means something's recording this. That's not him.
No, it's, and there are other experiences, again, a slightly different subject, recounted in Professor Dale Allison's book on religious experiences. By the way, his book is meant to be an update of the Variety of Religious Experiences book, written by a famous psychologist in the beginning of the 20th century, William James. William James is an American psychologist. He basically founded kind of the psychology of religion. And the beginning of the 20th century, he published his book, The Variety of Religious Experiences, and this is the seminal textbook still read today by people. And what Dale Allison has done is written, in a sense, a version of that book for the 21st century. So he's looking at religious experiences of ordinary people, not like anyone. Even atheists have religious experiences, it turns out. And some of the very ordinary people that had these experiences, that they recount incredible encounters with, and these could be, as I say, atheists or people who are not religious at all, but nevertheless, everyone experiences this, or seemingly many people do, experience demonic presences, evil presences. It could be outside in a wood, it could be in their room, in their bedroom at night, and they talk about this experience of a malevolent presence in the room or when they're asleep. Others speak about experiences of angels or angelic figures. Often they are Christianized in their retelling, but if you actually look at how they describe them, they're not specifically Christian. And that's very, very common amongst millions and millions of people who feel that they have been guided by an angel, and angel was present, or the angel rescued them from a disaster, or whatever. So these things, even though we say in the West Christianity is declining, which it is, it does not mean that religiosity or these experiences are not around. They're kind of coming from below rather than above in terms of institutional religion. People are just spontaneously having these experiences. So that kind of popularist kind of religiosity or spiritual encounter is very common, and irrespective of the fortunes of the church, you know, this is independent of that. As I say, atheists have these experiences.
How do we view it in respective of independence of Islam? Because if, as a Muslim, you're like listening to this and you go, well, these people aren't Muslim necessarily. No. Are we the only true religion? Is like, how are they experiencing this?
Just because Islam is the only true religion, it doesn't mean that there isn't truth in other religions. And it doesn't mean that just because an atheist, like this American professor of art who nearly died in Paris, he was an atheist, he had a hellish NDE. I mean, why wouldn't he? I mean, what has him being a Muslim or not got to do with it? You know, God still created him. He's still there on earth, and he still had an encounter with hell. Hell is still real for non-Muslims. You know, these are objective metaphysical facts, I think, and Islam speaks about them.
Yeah, the way I make sense of it, like, for example, the non-Muslim lady that saw angels, one of the ways
By the way, I don't know if she's Muslim or not. I actually don't know. All I saw was an elderly lady who was utterly transfixed by communicating with beings in the room or when I say in the room, I mean, that assumes they were located within a room. I mean, they were just in her vision.
In front of her.
Yeah. But people with her didn't see anything. I don't know about her beliefs. But just because she didn't say her Shahada doesn't mean that she didn't believe in God. I mean, Al-Ghazali speaks about, what about people who have not heard about Islam? Are they all going to go to hell?
No.
And the answer is, it's complicated. You know, we were all given light by which to live. And yeah. if we hadn't even heard of Islam, Al-Ghazali argues, I think, we would be judged according to the light we've been given.
A lot of Muslim scholars argue that.
Yeah, I mean, God is merciful. So why? So maybe this lady who wasn't a Muslim never heard about Islam, and so maybe she went to paradise.
The Quran talks about this. We do not punish a people unless exactly. we've sent them
exactly.
a messenger.
Exactly.
And there's also another verse in the Quran where Allah says, he speaks about the disbelievers and the believers, and then he says, كُلَّن نُمِدُّ هَؤُلَاءِ وَهَؤُلَاءِ مِنْ عَطَاءِ رَبِّكَ وَمَا كَانَ عَطَاءُ رَبِّكَ مَحْذُورًا. He says, from each faction we get from these and from these, from the bounty of your Lord, from the grace of your Lord. And the grace of your Lord is not in, almost in, when you're at, in yielding. Basically, if Allah's going to give an atheist millions of dollars, there's no angel that comes to him and goes, by the way, he's an atheist. And then Allah goes, oh, you know what? I was going to give it to him, but stop.
Yeah.
So mahdura is like hadar, like warning. Hey, by the way, this mm-hmm. this person's this. No, Allah doesn't operate that way. Subhanallah. One of the things that I thought was so interesting about this, about the NDEs, is that these people are looking at their own deeds. And this reminds me of a Quranic verse.
Yeah, exactly.
Where Allah says, اقرأ كتابك اقرأ كتابك كفى بنفسك اليوم عليك حسيبا, which means read your book, you today are sufficient enough exactly. as a prosecutor or
and that is very like
dictator.
The experiences people have actually, because they don't have someone, they're not recounting people, someone breathing down their neck telling them how wrong they were or about their evil deeds. No, they witness it for themselves, and they judge, the judgment is there implicit in that experience. It is more like what the Quran talks about.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that's the day of judgment then. I don't want to theologically evaluate that to that extent, because there's still the day of judgment, which is an eschatological event after this world. And I'm not saying these people are experiencing the day of judgment, but they are clearly experiencing some kind of self-evaluation nonetheless prior to that.
Yeah.
And I think the Quran might be alluding to that perhaps.
Yeah, and what's so interesting about this is, this is something that you've alluded to before and something that I've been thinking about a lot more lately, is the more you look into science, the material, it circles you back to the spiritual. Like right now, science has gotten to the point where we're reaching this thousands of years, and now we're at quantum physics, right? This almost spiritual, unseen world. And then the more you delve into the spiritual, it circles you back to the physical, prayer, fasting, physically giving in reality, charity. It's so interesting how people look at these two subjects as if they're separate, yet if you delve deeply into both, they lead to each other.
Yeah, there's, I mean, many scientists would say, whatever their dogmatic beliefs, that there is a mystery to the universe. The universe itself is mysterious. The laws of physics themselves, though we take them for granted, are mysterious. I mean, why are they even there? I mean, why do they bother to continue to exist? How did they come about in such an exquisitely fine-tuned form? And these are mysteries. Even the nature of life, where did life come from? The existence of life, no one knows. We don't know. A consciousness is another mystery, really. You get some people sometimes who claim they understand consciousness, but they don't. They're not really explaining consciousness as we understand it. They're reducing it to these kind of very elementary material forms. But the richness of human consciousness is still a mystery, and so on and so on. So science is about, in one way of looking at it, is an exploration of the mystery of the universe. I don't mean in some kind of airy-fairy way, but there is a sense of, there's a more going on, a lot more going on than we know, and there's a lot that we don't know.
It's so funny, because the more you're, I listen to a lot of scientists and read many of their articles, the more higher level you get in science, the more they start sounding like spiritual gurus,
there's a mystery at the heart of things, and you know, science is about exploring that mystery, but it's exploring it in a particular way with a particular methodology. It's not designed or intended to give a complete explanation of all of existence as existence, or ontology as ontology. It's looking at things that only science can only look at certain things in certain ways, usually empirically. So it can't really talk about the nature of meaning or the nature of morality or the nature of the divine, or the all these things are way outside of its own. You know, it has to keep to its lane. There are other lanes. There has to be this jurisdictional kind of limitation, and that's often not accepted by people like Richard Dawkins, who thinks that science is competent in every field, but it's not. It's only within its own particular domain that it's competent. And there are other domains, theology, metaphysics, morality, the meaning of life, etc., etc. So the science can't, you know, there's no point in asking a physicist what's the meaning of life, because he's involved in looking at the laws of physics. And that's not to do with meaning, it's to do with what we can empirically observe.
Yeah.
So they must keep to their lane. Some scientists don't keep to their lane and transgress into other lanes, and that's called scientism. And that's an ideology. It's not science. It's a man-made belief, that, or positivism, as it's sometimes called.
You've actually talked a lot about spiritual experiences you've had that had led you to Islam, or just simply led you to belief in God in general. But you never mentioned what they were. Are you comfortable sharing what those spiritual experiences
were?
Well,
how does one communicate spiritual experiences? It's words. We've all had spiritual experiences. I've had spiritual experiences as a Christian, or before as a Christian. I've learned not to base my understanding of truth on experiences, because I've done this exercise. If you Google, if you do a search online for the religious experiences of different adherents of other religions, say Mormons or Hindus or Christians or Jews or whatever. I mean, like Mormons, you'll find some amazing testimonies about, I saw the angel Moroni appear in the room, my bedroom, and he said this to me, or he made me feel this way. Okay. You know, you're going to get these amazing experiences in all sorts of religions. What does it prove? They cancel each other out, ultimately, because the claims they make about, say, God can't all be true. So a Trinitarian, say a Christian has had an amazing spiritual experience. Well, the Trinity is true. Okay, so you believe God is three persons and one being, etc. But you'll get an Orthodox Jew have an experience of God, which is monotheistic or not, but, you know, assuming it is. You have a Muslim who might have an experience of God, which is very monotheistic. So how are we to judge truth based on these divergent, contradictory experiences of God? You can't do it. And that's just God. I mean, you know, you're going to get radical, liberal, LGBT, Presbyterian Christians who will tell you that God has created transgender and wants to bless trans or whatever. I mean, because they've had this experience. Or, you know, I mean, people will talk like that. I mean, what does it prove? It doesn't prove anything. So I think ultimately we have to follow the Kranz method, which is to use, you know, to use our intellect to reflect and think, and rather than just base our lives on experiences, because they can be very subjective and misleading. I think I'm not saying all religious experiences are misleading. I'm just saying, because of the multiplicity of them, we can't use them for grounding our truth.
Yeah, a grand measurement, right?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of religious experiences are real. Yeah, whether it be experiences of out-of-body experiences we've mentioned, or maybe experiences of the demonic, can be very real in this world. Why not? I mean, it doesn't matter what you believe. If you encounter a demon, you encounter a demon. You could be a Hindu, an atheist, a Muslim. It's not about the religion. It's you're encountering a demon. And Islam speaks about these realities.
Right.
It doesn't generate those realities. It speaks about them.
And that's why the Quran never tries to poke at those experiences. It pokes at, like you said, your reasoning, your logic,
your thinking. Yeah. But anyone can experience these things, whatever their belief system is.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that doesn't question the Quran's truth system. It confirms it, because these are real things. And Islam speaks about them, and a lot of religions do, but Islam speaks them in a particularly pure, uncorrupted form. Other religions have been altered, like Christianity, which has made a god out of Jesus. You know, doesn't mean that Christians don't experience angels. Maybe angels do pop in and out. I don't know.